This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to put your predictions to the test? With Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your views on economic data and key climate indicators. Simply answer yes or no. Like, for example, will the change in the U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.6%? Or will the average U.S. temperature in 2024 be greater than 54 degrees? If you agree, buy a yes contract. If you don't, buy a no contract. It's that easy. Contracts cost 2 to 99 cents, and correct predictions earn $1 at settlement, and incorrect ones settle at zero. Forecast contracts are commission-free, plus earn 4.83% APY on your investments with an investment incentive coupon. Visit ibkr.com/forecast and make your predictions today. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China surges, then drops, then surges after massive stimulus is introduced. Tech leads into the end of the quarter and metals, including copper, get a boost. Our guest today is Manuel Bly, editor of thedowtheory.com. All this and much more on episode 888 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, 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 getting crazy out there. Just as you wondered why the Fed dropped rates by 0.5%, China unleashes the bazooka. Directly allowing for institutions to tap central bank funds to buy stocks. That's exactly what went on. As a matter of fact, when I was watching Bloomberg that evening when the China markets opened and when the policymakers were making their discussion and speeches about what was going to happen, their decision on their triple R rates and what was going on in the housing sector and how they were going to deal with mortgages and how they were going to deal with other stimulus matters. I mean, it was like a half hour of nonstop stimulus that went on that evening. And one of the things that caught my attention was the blatant allowance for institutions to come out, like insurance companies and investment houses and others, to tap central bank for cheap money to directly buy stocks to prop up the stock market. Wow, we know what happened there. So many measures were introduced, incredible, making buying homes easier. Not many, but some were not convinced it's going to be enough, that the situation in China is so dire, it's so negative. The problems that are associated with housing, the mistrust for the government, that this stimulus package isn't going to be enough to really make it happen. But generally speaking, when we're in a cycle that central banks like Sweden and the United States and others are downshifting their inflation expectations, and then what they're doing from there is they're lowering rates like we've been seeing, and you add this massive bazooka, well, there you have it. Things are going on pretty well. This is one of the reasons why we talked about overweighting emerging markets some time ago, that there looked like it was at the end of the cycle, the dollar was coming down potentially. It'd be good for the foreign currency. So you have both emerging market stocks, emerging market bonds, I mean, doing incredibly well. By the way, if you didn't know, this is Andrew Horowitz. That's me. Hi. Coming to you from the almost completed redesigned studios here right in the Horowitz & Company offices in downtown Fort Lauderdale. So welcome. This is the place where you could find us, I would say on the dial, but it's really on the podcast apps out there. In our office is where we actually create our portfolios. We manage them, we research them, we report on it directly to you, where we help you with your planning needs throughout your life. And Last week, I had a great opportunity. I had a client that's been with us for about 25 plus, maybe 30 years. And They live about 2 miles north of where our offices are in Palm Beach County. In fact, the whole family's clients. There's kids and grandkids at this point. Anyway, they asked me to come up. They made me a beautiful lunch, tasty as can be. And we sat and we discussed the wonderful life they had. And we discussed their investments. They're all set. They're in good shape. They're in great shape. We found it necessary actually to get into a discussion about actually how they can give some money away to their kids and to charities, which is a pretty good problem to have, right? You get into your later ages of life, late 70s, early 80s, and you're like, hey, I'm not worried about my income. I'm not worried about my assets. We're set. We're doing great. What should I do? I can't spend it all. I can't take it with me. You know, I could leave an inheritance. I could do whatever. But why not do some things like some gifting now? And wonderful, wonderful feeling at the end of that meeting that we were able to come away with this newfound plan to help the entire family out. And there's a number of kids and grandkids. And let's face it, some of us, we worry about money, right? But what is... it's all about for me is helping my clients not worry about money, navigating their financial life to a point that they don't have to worry about it at all. But yet we do. There are times in our lives where maybe things aren't going as wonderful. Maybe from our job perspective, family, you know, money is tight. Markets maybe not doing as well as they're doing right now. And we worry about if we're going to have enough. We worry about if we made the right choices. And that's precisely why I had this renewed and invigorated feeling about what we do here after meeting with these folks. Because I said, you know, man, how wonderful it is if we keep on educating ourselves to the fast-changing financial climate. And yes, working with a financial advisor that you trust sure can help a lot. I mean, you could do it alone, of course, but you don't have to. And I always say that, yes, I can cut my own hair, but the reason that I go to a professional barber is because, well, wait for it, it's a matter of perspective. I can't see all sides of my own head. And looking in the mirror, trying to cut, but you ever do that? You ever try to cut something looking in the mirror? It's like backwards and upside down, and you're not exactly where your hand should be because it's mirrored. And you don't have the opportunity to flip it, make it look exactly right with a regular mirror. This is why people use advisors. They want a 360-degree view. It's like having an air traffic controller when you fly. Right? They could see 360 degrees around, just like a hairstylist, just like a barber when you get your hair cut, when you're making your way through life with all those financial decisions, right? The best way to get where my lunching clients have gotten to is to do what you do best, what they do best, and allow yourselves to hand off other things to those that do it their best. So I think it's really important to understand that it's not just finances that we're talking about here. We're talking about things in life like, why do you go to an accountant? Why do you use an attorney? Why do you use maybe a professional landscape architect? Why do you use people to paint your house rather than doing it yourself? It's time. It's ability. And you know what? We can't do everything ourselves. So a lot of you are probably frustrated with, wow, man, I wish I had more money in the market, or I wish I had less money in, or I wish I was in that sector, or I wish I was not spending so much time doing this all the time, or doubting myself. The constant doubt of, again, worry about, will I have enough? Am I doing the right thing? Did I make the right choices? These are the things that we focus on all the time. But you don't have to be so miserable with all those choices, all those thoughts that are going through your head all the time. You don't need to be so upset about it, because if you work with a trusted advisor on this, things can be a lot easier. And I challenge you into the end quarter of the year that this may be a time to start thinking about, should I be working with someone, whoever that is? So on to the final quarter of the year. Here we go. Let's get some insights from a gent that studies the market, has been doing it for years. And our guest today is Manuel Bly. He's the editor of the DowTheory.com, which is a top-ranked investment letter that has garnered a remarkable reputation for assisting investors in navigating bear markets while maximizing profits during the bull markets. What else could he ask for, right? His investment letter is frequently quoted by Forbes and MarketWatch, Yahoo Finance, all sorts of other places. And he's also been extending the application of the Dow Jones, Dow theory these days, called but beyond stocks to encompass U.S. bonds and precious metals. He's actively traded for his personal portfolio, and he was also a trader, et cetera. So, my friend, welcome back. Hola. How are you?
Hey, hola. Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
We were just talking off air a second ago. Your hometown is Barcelona. I was there a couple of weeks ago. I was mentioning that. We were talking about all the things that are happening. I mean, it really is an amazing thing how the markets these days, the global markets, have been operating in a way that is relatively bullish or very bullish. But I wanted to get down with you on the discussion of where we are on the current state of the markets in the short, medium, and longer term, just to get your idea, and then we can start talking about that.
Okay, let's get started. So first of all, now we have a middle-aged bull market. So the bull market, according to our definition, began in the October lows in 2022. And according to our calculations, it's a middle-aged bull market. So it's neither too young nor too old. So statistically, still it has some good odds of having a last bullish leg. Some say, let's say 6, 7, 8 months. So I'm still bullish. And for the time being, well, September, the seasonality is against the market. Well, we saw now the market today is making higher highs, the S&P. But, well, short term, there was reason to be a little bit bearish, but bearish in the short term. So nothing that changes the primary trend. The primary trend is unambiguously bullish, very bullish.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about the short term trends and all that. It's the last several months, the start of the month has been horrific. And then it almost gave an excuse for people to buy. I almost want to think that if in fact it wasn't so disastrous in the beginning of those months, that it wouldn't have given as much of a reason for people to buy. Thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that is that we were not tricked into selling. So we had a bullish position, 100% investment position. So what happened in August and what happened right now, the beginning of September, was just a correction within a primary bull market. So we identified that it was just a correction. So it's like a roller coaster. So, okay, it's unpleasant, it goes down, but it was just a correction. So we were not tricked into selling. So we kept our position. Okay, now the stock market seems to be making higher highs. And it's a bull market. So the trick is to identify when is the secondary correction versus a full-fledged bear market. And secondary reactions are made to deceive us. And of course, they can deceive. And it's really it's really unpleasant. We have feelings. And I get emails from subscribers. Look, shouldn't we sell now? No. Don't sell, it's a correction. So, okay, so it's been like a roller coaster, but it was only secondary reactions, but they are really painful. We are human beings.
And sure. The interesting thing is these corrections during inside of a bull market. Just wondering, and I don't know if you have any actual data on this, but just from your thoughts on this and looking back, these were quick. I mean, very quick, right? You know, 3-day, 4-day flushes, and then right back to work. Is that usually how they work, or is this just an unusually strong period?
No, yes, and far more. This is typical price action in secondary reactions. It's not Manuel Bly that says that. It was the founder of that theory, Charles Dow, that said and tabulated that secondary reactions within a bull market tend to go very swift. He used the word swiftly. So goes quickly. It frightens you, but nonetheless, it's not the real thing. On the other hand, when you have a bear market and then you get a rally, but within the bear market, then such rallies tend to be smoother. So it's counterintuitive price action. But in a bull market, this bearish corrections tend to go very quickly. They scare the hell out of the people to sell at the worst possible time. So this is normal. So I mean, it's a phenomenon that was already known 100 years ago.
Now, is this action, this whippy action that we're seeing, one day, like, oh my God, get out of all the tech and let's run into the consumer staples, as an example. And the next day, oh my gosh, let's get into the utilities and let's sell the consumer discretionary. Is this something that is also part of a bull market, or is this a rotational process that is done because people are looking for a home for money in a time where they can scrape some profits off of all sorts of areas and kind of just rotate back into other ones?
Yeah, but this is healthy. Yeah, this is rotation for more. And this is also why we have those swings, because some money is getting out, for instance, of semiconductors, and it's going into another sector. But this is healthy because this shows that we're getting improving participation. You know that many blame this bull market and say, no, this is not a bull market. It's just a bear market rally because there is no good breath. Well, now we have good breath. So many sectors are going up. So this is healthy. Of course, there is some sector rotation, but this is healthy. This is one of the hallmarks of a bull market. So no, it makes me optimistic for Lamar. It would be worrying if we still only had technology being the main driver of this bull market. So now we have other sectors that are also making higher highs. And this also makes me bullish because now the bull market is getting traction across many sectors, even though maybe semiconductors or the sectors that were the best performers in the beginning of this bull market, now they are lagging behind. But it's good. Sector rotation. This is good. This is bull market.
Healthy is what you're saying. Here's some of my theory. And tell me what you think about this. This is maybe, tell me if I'm a crackpot, okay? Just tell me if I'm off my mind. I'm thinking that the incredible run-up of some of these technology stocks and the size of the actual market cap of where they went to. And when people are taking down, let's say, a 1% or 2% position to take some profits, to scrape some profits off of these enormous names and have to then reallocate them somewhere. And they reallocate them into whatever it is, pick what it is, a much smaller market cap. It is actually so much pressure.
Exactly.
That it's taking this huge amount of money, which is a small percentage of the big boys, right? And it's putting into another sector that it's almost getting swamped with excess cash. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, it's reasonable, but since you are mentioning, it's totally reasonable. It's too much money chasing too few goods. That said, I'm still not so bullish with small caps. I need to see technical confirmation. I use a ratio between small caps. You can take the Russell 2000 or the S&P 600 small cap index. And I make I calculate the ratio between these ETFs or sectors and the S&P 500. And those chart ratios still look bearish. So I wouldn't jump that. Personally, I didn't jump the gun. I've been informing my subscribers in the last 3-4 months. So we are really stalking. So it's like you're stalking the price, but said, not yet. And until now, I have been proven right. Because as you know, there have been a couple of breakups, but they were really a fake out. So a couple of months ago, it looked like the Russell 2000, also the S&P 600, seemed to really go back to life. And no, it was a rally and then once again underperforming the S&P 500. So it is too much money, as you say, chasing a too small good. But that said, I still think that it's not the time for a small cap. It will come, but I am a technical guy. So I know that earnings revisions are up for small caps. I know that small caps profit from interest rate cuts. So this is a sector that most profits from lower interest rates.
Well, that's because most of them are unprofitable. 40% of the Russell 2000 is unprofitable.
Exactly. Well, I wrote in the previous letter, and I think that there is a post on my website, which is on the free area, there is a post that I say that the Russell 2000 is a very badly constructed index. So it contains lots of young, of really very bad companies. So even if you have to choose something in the small cap realm, then go to the S&P 600, because the inclusion criteria is more selective. So they look at some measures of profitability, cash flow. So personally, I'm really no friend of the Russell 2000, so I will never buy it. But even for the S&P 600, I would wait until the ratio chart between the S&P 600 and the S&P 500 turns bullish for the small caps. And this is not the case right now. Maybe it will happen in a couple of weeks or 1 week, but not now.
So in your recent letter, that's, by the way, out September 1st, is the Dow Theory letter. You can get information about it at thedowtheory.com, home of the Shanup and Bly timing indicators. That's the, did I say that right, Shanup?
Yeah, sure. Right.
Mm-hmm. So you have on the top of it always the very easy color coding of your two indicators, the Dow Theory for the 21st century and the Bly timing indicator, and then the composite of the two, right?
Is that the two of them?
Yeah. So basically, it's green. It's all green. It's all green across the board. And the idea right now is that, you know, there's things that are going on. There's gappiness in the markets that you talk about. You talked about in the beginning of the month some short-term weakness, just a few weeks, and then again, you know, talking more about the idea that there's a lot more bullish than bearish factors in the markets right now. So you've been on the right side of this technically, fundamentally, and you dismissed recession. You pretty much said, no, we're not going to have recession, even though I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Shanup recession indicator was flashing a warning. Am I correct about that?
Yes, you're correct. It flashed a warning in June this year, so a couple of months ago. But look, these indicators, even if they are our own indicators, we have to be intelligent and don't fight the trend. So, okay, we got the recession alert. It's right, in June. But a recession alert doesn't mean that you have to immediately sell your holdings. Why? Because sometimes there is a lag between the recession alert and the bull market top. And sometimes this lag can be really for a very long time. So what I explained, I think it was in the July 1st letter a couple of months ago to subscribers, is that when we get our recession alert, which is really very accurate because it never missed one recession, so we should take it seriously. But there is an important point. When we got the recession alert, but our two timing indicators, the Shanup Bly time indicator and the Dow Theory for the 21st century, were in green, bullish, then it was not advisable to sell on the recession alert. So it was advisable, okay, I give the benefit of the doubt to the prevailing trend, so I ride the trend, and when I get the first sell signal, then I sell all, because I explain a little bit. We have two indicators, the Dow Theory, the Bly time indicator. So when one of them turns red, sell, we only sell one half. And then we wait for the other indicator to turn red to sell the remaining half. So this is like flying a plane with two engines. So it gives you a much smoother ride. So you don't depend, you don't bet all the farm on one indicator. So yeah, you have two. It's like flying with the two motors in engines. It's a much smoother ride. So this is important. So normally, when we get a sell signal, we sell half. And when we get a second sell signal, then we sell the remaining. Ah. But when we get a recession signal, I tested, it's there for all to see, and both time indicators were green, it means that there is a powerful bull market, because there is no contradiction. When the two of them confirm and are bullish, green, it means that it's not advisable to sell because we just got a recession alert. Because in the past, when this happened, the bull market continued higher before going down. So what is the piece of advice I would give? I would say, okay, it's a bull market. Don't argue with a bull market. But nonetheless, the bull market becomes suspect because there is a recession alert. But of course, it's like in 2023 when with the inverted yield curve. Many will say, out of the market. Okay, the market went more or less 25% higher despite the inverted yield curve. So we must be careful. So these indicators are not per se to time the market, but it's just it's a warning, it's an alert.
Yeah.
So what will I do? And it has been tested. It's not a hunch. This is not a hunch. So what should we do when we are in a bull market with our two time indicators in green, but we get alert, maybe recession, maybe recession. So what should we do? We ride the bull market, but when we get the first sell signal from any of our two indicators, then we sell 100%. So this is the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Under normal conditions, without a recession alert, we would be selling only 50%. So let's say that our theory says in a couple of months, sell. Okay, under normal conditions, I would sell 50%. And I would keep the composite indicator 50% invested because the other time indicator remains green. Now,
makes sense.
We have a recession alert. So then things change. Okay, I give the benefit of the doubt to the prevailing trend. No, okay,
right.
Alert.
Yep.
I continue riding the bull. But in the very moment, the first time indicator says sell, I sell all. So I get out of the market immediately because the first display of weakness when there has been a recession alert means that the market then can fall quick and a lot, can plunge really deeply. This is not a hunch, I repeat. It has been measured, so it's not that I think, no. And I think in the July 1st letter, I gave all the precise calculations with charts.
Yep.
Why then it is advisable to sell all when we get the first sell signal. Furthermore, I called it because all these signals can be coded, and I run a computer simulation going back to the 1970s. And if we apply this rule, then we would have increased performance of our indicators by circa 0.4% per annum. It looks like little, but in one specific trade, it's a lot.
Yeah, I hear you. So I want to talk about some of the things that work in terms of timing the market, because there's a lot of things that work and a lot of things that don't work. Timing the market is a difficult thing as it is, but you use a lot of different things put together. But before we do that, I want to take a quick break and I want to come back to that. But I guess the question I'm going to ask you and get ready for is what things and what areas do you look at that you feel are good areas or indicators to work for looking at timing the market versus those that are not. So hang on 1 second. And I want to talk about Interactive Brokers. Specifically, I want to talk about Portfolio Analyst, which is powered by Interactive Brokers, and it helps sophisticated investors like you understand the health of their complete financial portfolio. Portfolio Analyst is free. It's easy to use. It's basically personal finance software that creates a consolidated view of banking and brokerage and even your credit card accounts. You can compare your consolidated portfolio against more than 200 benchmarks or create customized benchmarks for analyzing performance. Calculate time and money-weighted rates of return and use Portfolio Analyst for forecasting. Sign up for free. Yes, that's right. You don't need an account. Sign up for free at PortfolioAnalyst.com. We're back with Manuel Bly from the DowTheory.com. He has a great newsletter out there. And we were talking about market timing and what works and what doesn't work. So give me some examples of things that let's start with the doesn't work for a second. Can we do that?
Okay, exactly. Let's start negative and then we will become positive.
Yeah.
So
name a few things here.
Okay, the negative things. Yeah, I have a good news and bad news. So let's start by the bad news. Okay, GDP. GDP, gross domestic product, gross national product, this doesn't.
No.
And once again, it has been proven by Mark Halbert, Market Watch. He has several articles debunking the notion that GDP can predict the stock market. Furthermore, he's got a really very interesting article that says even if we were prescient and we could be able to foresee next year's GDP and we could input this next year's GDP into our calculations, it remains worthless. So it really has no bearing.
Even if we knew in advance. GDP is, it would give us no trading edge.
No, not trading edge. Nope. It has been one great article from Mark Halbert.
Okay.
So it really doesn't work. It really doesn't work. So this is what doesn't work. Okay, then current earnings. Okay, I read these days, earnings are going up. This is great. Earnings are going up. Okay, earnings is already discounted. So earnings really have no bearing with future performance.
Huh.
What? No, nothing at all. Furthermore, there is some counterintuitive result. So maybe when earnings drop a lot, then it is likely that you are buying a bottom, and then you're going to get better performance next year, which makes sense. So let's imagine there is a recession. So the end of the world is nigh. And then, of course, earnings are, you know, like the Great Recession, whatever, minus 40% earnings. Then is the time to buy, because then the stock market is really depressed, because it is anticipating the same dire conditions for the future. So, okay, earnings, but present earnings really don't predict anything. On the other hand, what predicts something is the earnings trends revision. So if revisions are going up, this is bullish. But in itself is not the best time indicator, but it gives you a bullish bottom. Valuations, this is another thing that doesn't work. It works if you are a buy and hold guy, but this interview is about market timing.
Mm-hmm.
It is important to know your time frame, your time horizon. So our trades span roughly 1 year. So more or less, average. Sometimes it's 3 months, sometimes, like now, it can be 2 years. So more or less, on average, we buy, and more or less, after 1 year, we sell.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, it's important. You have to know your time frame, because when people sell, I'm bullish. Okay, you're bullish for tomorrow, for the next 3 months, for the next year, for the next generation. It really makes. So valuations, it is true, are important if you are a buy and hold guy that is going to buy stocks today and hold them for the next 10 years. So then, okay, valuations play a role in determining your future returns. But on the other hand, if your time horizon is 1 year, as ours, then really they play no role at all, are totally irrelevant. And once again, this is not what I think. This has been documented. It's really more than proven. It doesn't work. So this is good news, because you know that the stock market is really very overvalued. And there are studies that said that the expected returns for the S&P in the next 10 years are going to be really very low, because we are starting from really lofty valuations. So if we were buy and hold guys, then we should have plenty to worry. But the good news for us market timers in our time frame is that really these lofty valuations are really irrelevant for our trading purposes. So we buy, sell. And furthermore, it could be even good, because I did some research that the bad times for buy and hold are the good times for us trend followers in our time. So it could even be good for us, or at least it's not bad. So forget valuations. For trend followers, when your time frame is less than 2 years, something like that, it's relevant. Valuations start to play a role when your time horizon is about 3-4 years. But this is not our case.
Hmm.
Okay, now if you agree, let's talk about what works.
Okay.
So what works to time the stock market? Well, first of all, I'm sorry, this is my broker, TT Station. Yeah. I'm sorry, let's continue. So what works in the market? Well, first off, trend following. Of course, I am a trend follower. So price action gives you lots of information. What's going up will likely continue going up, and what's going down will likely continue going down.
Okay, fair enough.
It looks like self-evident, but many people have a hard time following the market, saying, no, it's going up, but it should go down. Well, forget what it should do or what ought to do, but what it's doing. So focus on the now. But okay, trend following works, of course. You need to have some skills. It's not just as simple, say, okay, it goes up, I buy. So you have to know when, the timing issue. But on a general basis, trend following works. Okay, another thing that works, sentiment. But once again, we have to put it in the appropriate time frame. Sentiment, investor sentiments, are they bullish, are they bearish, works, I would say, in a time frame from, let's say, 1 month to 6 months. So bearish sentiment today, that plays no role in what's going to happen to our market in 2 years. No. But on the other hand, since our time frame is 1 year, bearish and bullish sentiment can help us pinpoint local tops and bottoms. And we use that in our letter. So for instance, there was a top in bullish sentiment in January 2020. So just before the market top. So given that our time frame is 1 year, sentiment sometimes help us fine-tune our entries and exits. Or for instance, it's very bearish. Okay, it's very bearish, but sentiment bearish has implication for the next 3-6 months, not more. Okay, but it's a good place to find a bottom. So sentiment in this time frame works. What else does work? Interest rates, notably in our time frame. If there is, now we, on September 18th, there was a rate cut, and they say it's bullish. Okay, it's bullish, but on what time frame? Is it going to be bullish in the next 10 years? No, it's going to be bullish for the next year. And there are studies that prove that. So once again, time frame, cause and effect, but within your time frame. So interest rate cuts are normally bullish, notably when they are made and there is no recession. Because interest rate cuts, when there is a recession, then they are bearish, but not because they are an interest rate cut is bearish, but because we have a recession, which is bearish for the stock market. But on a general basis, interest rate cuts is a bullish factor. Another one, another factor that really works, and I use it in my buy time indicator, margin debt. What is margin debt? It's the amount of leverage that people have with, in their brokerage accounts, margin. Okay, this works. When margin debt is going up, it means that, well, Framorik has an explanation. People are willing to leverage their position, so they are bullish. They are increasing their position. Framorik is an extra.
They have more risk. They have more desire for risk.
Risk on, and leverage my position. And for all, it's more fuel for the bull market. So, and when margin debt goes down, it's less fuel, and for more, it can be also associated with margin calls, which has a cascading effect. And for more, then it catalyzes into a bear market. So it's been more than tested. There is a special report, a free one, by the way. There's also in the free area of our website, there's a special report explaining our time indicator is based on many things, but also margin, and it works. So if the margin, if the trend of margin debt is up, then the most likely outcome for the stock market in our time frame, 1 year, in our time frame, is that it's going to be up. If it's going down, then the implications are bearish. Once again, in our time frame. Okay, another thing that works, which I also use in my blind time indicator. It's a mixture of several things that work. What I call market health. What is market health? Okay, it's the ratio between aggressive and defensive indexes. What is for me defensive? Utilities. What is for me aggressive? The Nasdaq, for instance. It's more aggressive to put your bets on the Nasdaq than utilities.
Mm-hmm.
So then I perform several ratios between the most aggressive and the less aggressive sectors. It's a little bit not so complicated, but okay. So there is some number crunching.
Mm-hmm.
So then I get a reading. So I distillate all these numbers and I have a score from 0 to 3. So if I get a reading of 3, it means excellent market health. It means that aggressive sectors are really beating the pants of the defensive sectors. And when you get a market health reading of 0, it means that defensive sectors are the strongest and aggressive are really underperforming. So I can get the readings. I easily see 3, 2, 1, 0. So when there is good market health, so readings, let's say, of 2, 3, then tested all this, then it is more likely in our time frame, 1 year, that the market is going to go up. When you have bad market health, let's say 1, 0, it is more likely that the market is going down in the next few months, 1 year. And what happens when both margin debt is negative, a negative trend, and you have poor market health? Well, then please fasten your seatbelts. Then it's very likely, no, really, yeah. It's very likely, but yeah. It's been tested. So it's, and these are the entrails, the guts of my blind time indicator. There are other things. There is a trend element, a margin debt element, and a market health element. And there is the interplay of these three different factors. But of course, the ratio of aggressive and defensive tells you something about future stock market performance. For instance, right now in September, there is lots of talk that utilities are really the strongest sector. They are really outperforming, blah, blah, blah. And this is bad news, because if utilities outperform the Nasdaq, it doesn't mean a bear market. No, not necessarily. But it means really almost a flat market for the Nasdaq. This is what the past research shows. So can it be different this time? Yes, of course, nothing is certain. There are many factors. But what I know is when they say, wow, the utilities are outperforming the strongest, okay, well, this doesn't necessarily say a bear market is coming, but it says that there is some kind of risk-off attitude. Because if people were really risk-on attitude, the Nasdaq would be outperforming utilities. This is only just one thing that works. I don't use it as a solo, as a long only.
Yeah, I would push back on that for a second, because I think utilities have a totally different reason and rationale why they're moving up right now. And I actually think it has to do with some of the Nasdaq tech companies with their incredible amount of usage. I'm in utilities. We have clients in utilities, and I think the reason is I'm looking at a secondary or even a tertiary play on the AI boom and the need for expanded facilities that are being built out that have incredible amount of energy demand. That's why I'm doing it.
Sure. And this is why this time it might be different. And furthermore, I am a trend follower. If I get a positive trend in the Nasdaq, I will be in the Nasdaq, no matter what market health says.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, it would be better if the Nasdaq outperforms utilities. But I agree. I agree with your judgment. And furthermore, as an aside, I'm bullish on the USA. Despite all your ailments, I'm bullish on your country. You have lots of energy. And, well, you have been in Europe, and Europe has an energy problem. And, of course, then the Europeans have a problem.
But the food is so much better.
You cannot have everything.
Between the various places I went, I'm thinking, when I went to Italy, the first time I ever went to Italy, a side note, I'm eating this food. This chef could put a piece of plain chicken on my plate. I'm like, what did you do to this chicken? It is delicious. I come back, the first thing I do is I come back to the United States, I walk into the Italian restaurant, I burst open the door of the kitchen of the chef that I know, I smack him in the face, I said, what happened between the flight from Italy to here that the food is so terrible here and so delicious over there?
You got to do. You have to invest your money in the U.S. stock market and then spend it in Italy and Spain.
There's some good thinking right there. I like it.
This is why I live in the Dominican Republic. Really, Europe has a really deep problem. Now I'm talking fundamentals, but they have an energy problem and also, lots of regulation, much more than the USA. With artificial intelligence, they are really, the European Union is blocking all development. So, the joke, no? USA innovates, China imitates, and Europe regulates. Yeah. And this is the way it goes.
Yeah, steals.
So I'm bullish on the, you have your issues, of course, but despite all your issues, I'm bullish on the USA.
And also
the US stock market. And this is another thing. They say, look, European valuations, let's go to the stock market. European valuations are cheap compared to the USA. But look, watch. The USA, as a country, stock market is behaving like a growth stock because it is discounting higher earnings. And of course, growth stocks have high price-earning ratios. And Europe is cheap for good reason, like a cheap value stock. But a cheap can become cheaper. So this is why I'm bullish in the USA. Okay, maybe we get a bear market in 6 months. We are market timers. Then, we'll ride the bear. But on the fundamental long term, I am bullish on the USA. You have cheap energy, you are hard workers, and you have innovation.
Yeah,
and
you
have these two things that we Europeans don't have. We have regulation, we are lazy, because there are exceptions. But on a general basis, we don't have the work attitude of the Americans. And furthermore, we have an issue, a deep issue with energy. So make your money in the US stock market, and then you go to Madrid and Italy, and then you have your good food there.
I like it. Manuel Bly from thedowtheory.com. I know you can get some of your stuff, a tester version of what you have. We'll just send them right over to your site. We'll have all the information on how to get there on the show notes for the Disciplined Investor podcast, number 888, which I think is a lucky number in China, by the way. I think so. Thanks for being here. I appreciate you.
Okay. Thanks for having me on your show. It's always a pleasure. So hope to see you soon.
Okay. Thanks so much. See ya.
Okay. See you. Bye.
And that's going to wrap it up. You know, this week we have, I would call him a bull right now, a substantial bull. Next week, we're going to go to the other side and bring on a bear. It's going to be kind of a back-to-back contest of what's going on, the bull versus the bear. But make sure to stay tuned to that. Make sure to get yourself subscribed over at YouTube. By the way, The Disciplined Investor is now on YouTube as well as DH Unplugged. You can go there and just grab each episode when it comes out right away with a subscription there, or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Amazon Podcasts, wherever you want to grab it from. Thanks for joining me this week and every week, and I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.